T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore. I'm a weaver, and oh, I'm a weaver. She had a place in his life. I am blind and I don't like what I think I see.
Taking it to the street.
Taking it to the street.
Taking it to the street.
No more need for
It's a real pleasure to have a chance to visit with Michael McDonald, and he's done so many things in his great career. We'll talk about those things in just a bit, but let's cover the important things first, Michael, and that is you're coming home, first of all, to be part of a great event that's coming up on Sunday night on the 29th of September out at the Two Hill Center at the University of Missouri campus in St. Louis. You, Brian Owens, Kennedy Holmes, just to name a few, but the Ferguson connection is alive and well for Sunday night.
Oh yeah, yeah, and like we were just saying, I wish I got back to Ferguson more. You know, just like anything else. You know, as you get out there in life, you wish you made time for things more. When I do get back there, unfortunately, over the years, it's been more for like funerals than the good reasons you might want to go back to your hometown. But I do appreciate the fact that I'm going to be able to go back there and actually, you know, play with Brian and the whole group that will be performing that night. It's, Ferguson's just got some phenomenally talented people. And Brian is a guy that I've become friends with over the last couple of years. We've worked together in different capacities on the road and in the studio. And he's just an amazingly talented young man and a doer. You know, the guy, he really is a multitasker for sure, and he gets things done, you know, and he does a lot of projects per year, which I admire because I move at a much, you know, slower pace. Yeah.
Well, the deal on Sunday night, all the proceeds from this event will go to LIFE, Leadership, Innovation, Faith, and Entrepreneurship. It's a 501(c) nonprofit organization launched by Brian, and it's to provide leadership and development for urban youth and young artists pursuing the arts throughout Ferguson and certainly the metropolitan area. So one of the things about you, Michael, for people who followed your career, you have always found a way to give back. And once again, this is an opportunity for you to do that. So my first question to you is, who inspired you to take this journey that you've had for so many years with great success?
My dad was a singer when I started out. My entree into music was, you know, kind of a, you know, haphazard kind of thing. My dad used to sing in a lot of the saloons around St. Louis, not really so much as a professional, but just because that's what he liked to do. And I always like to say he was in more bars than anyone I know, but he never drank. You know, he just loved to sing, and that was the pub life was you know, kind of a part of his makeup. They put me on a bar when I was like four, and I sang some song like Love is a Many Splendored Thing or Around the World, I Search for You, and they all laughed and I thought and clapped, and I thought they thought I was really great, so I you know, I got the bug, you know. And I just from there, you know, kind of grew up playing in bands in Ferguson. Started out in Ferguson for sure, we used to play the Castaway quite a bit growing up, all of us guys, and the guys that I still know who still play music around Ferguson and St. Louis area. So, you know, it's really fun for me to go back and touch base with all these guys and touch base with Brian. Because, again, you know, I have great admiration for him, and I love to see that Ferguson has still got a vital music scene, and I attribute a lot of that to him and his energies, you know.
Yeah, he's kept things alive, but certainly you were one of the forerunners to it. And now we have a young lady in Kennedy Holmes who's her career is starting to really take off. So I assume there is something in the water in Ferguson that is turning out these good, talented artists.
Yeah, well, I like to think so. I hope I drank enough of it before I left, you know.
Well, you've done all right along the way. You've done okay. Which brings me to this, because you had to make that decision, like most aspiring artists, to leave St. Louis and go west, young man. You found how did that work for you, and how did you find your way to go west and then find your way to get involved with a band like Steely Dan, and then from that point it just goes up from there?
You know, I was lucky enough that a guy heard me playing in a club in Champaign, Illinois. By then we were, you know, kind of making the rounds of all the college towns with our bands. You know, we were going up and playing whatever college clubs, you know, in the Midwest area we could find in the small college towns, pretty much, you know. And every once in a while we play the big cities. You know, we play on Rush Street in Chicago or you know, Appleton, Wisconsin, or you know, Milwaukee, places like that, Indianapolis. But mostly it was, you know, we were just hitting college towns and kind of, you know, not really doing much else, but, you know, barely making a living, really. We enjoyed it. You know, it's what we love to do. And a guy who had grown up in Champaign on a farm had gone to college, moved out to California. He was a member of the New Christy Minstrels back in the day, and he started producing records for RCA and wound up producing the Jefferson Airplane's first album and Harry Nilsson's first album, Jose Feliciano, and some artists like that. So when he came home one holiday season, he came down to the club and heard us play, and then asked me if I wanted to come out and make a record in California. So the rest was history for me. And I owe him a lot. You know, one of the best things he did for me was, to keep me alive out here. He used me on a lot of his sessions, which I had no business being on because, it got me in the door to play in sessions with the likes of the Wrecking Crew and that whole bunch of musicians in LA. And, like I say, I had no business being on the floor in that studio, but he did it because he was a producer and he could, you know, call the shots and he got me paid, you know, through the union so that I could pay the rent, you know. And, you know, that was a break that, you know, had that not been the case, I probably would have packed up and gone home long before anything happened or any of the gigs came my way with Steely Dan and the Doobies, you know.
You know, it's interesting you talk about thinking about packing up. I always ask people the question, what would you have done if you weren't doing what you're doing?
I never knew the answer to that. You know, I look back on my life in that respect, and there was a job I worked. You know, I worked for my mother. She was managed an S&H Green Stamp store, and that pretty much convinced me that I was never going to do manual labor because I honestly wasn't very good at it, and you know, I was the guy that, you know, would have got fired immediately anyway. And I realized that I could make a little bit of money under the table playing in clubs and at least buy gas and pay the rent, you know, buy food. And so that was good enough for me at that time in my life. You know, it wasn't like I had any really huge ambitions. I just liked being a musician, and I wanted to do that for as long as I could get away with it, you know. I figured someday somebody's going to come along and make me go to work, but until, as long as I could avoid it, I would, you know.
Nothing wrong with that. That's a big group, though. Don't forget, there's a lot of people who look at it that way. We're visiting with Michael McDonald. Yeah. He's going to be in St. Louis on Sunday at the Two Hills Center. Everything starts at 7:30. Michael, for you, I know that we mentioned Steely Dan, and then all of a sudden the Doobie Brothers rolls along. Tyran Porter, was he the guy who knew you, who thought maybe you'd be a good fit with the Doobie Brothers?
Actually, my entree to the Doobies was Jeff Baxter, who I had worked with in Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Skunk was out on the road with the Doobies. And after the Steely Dan broke up, the better part of the band, there's a wind blow, guy with a leaf blower. After the Steely Dan band broke up, Jeff went on the road with Elton John and the Doobie Brothers and Eagles. I mean, a million different people, and just kind of tried to keep working. And he was out with the Doobies when there became an opportunity for me to come out and fill in for a while. And so he called me and convinced me to take on the job. And I thought it was very temporary. But I was glad to get to work, and turns out it parlayed into a whole few years with the band and becoming a member of the band, and for which I'm forever grateful. You know.
And you guys still do some things together now from time to time.
Yeah, we do. We do. I still see the guys from time to time. I always look forward to it. For me, it's a chance to catch up with everybody. And these guys are, they're wonderful guys, and our friendships over the years have lasted, and that was really probably the best part of that experience for me was the friends I made in the band and the time together we got to travel around the world and play music.
Michael McDonald is our guest. Michael, I want to ask you about live music. You're an artist from an era that continues to remind audiences to support and engage in live music. With technology outpacing what I would call true talent, are you concerned where live music may be headed?
I'm not really, Mike. I think there'll always be a place for what we did back when that was the best technology could offer. But I think there's a lot of artists who use technology very creatively, and a lot of it is certainly different than, even song structures have changed. What constitutes the structure of a song has become totally different, and largely due to the technology that's available. I was listening to a young artist last night, Anderson .Paak, and he's just so great, and so creative, and yet the songs and the multi-layered rhythmic aspects of it are things that, probably couldn't be done without, 1,000 people in the studio at one time, or something. But, because of technology and his artistry, he's able to kind of use these things to build tracks that I don't know that you could build any other way, really. And the lyrics are insightful and clever, and, the arrangements are almost so complex as to boggle your mind, and back in the days when we were recording, we were only capable of pulling off so much in a live recording date because it was like six or seven guys in the room and, we could barely, play our own part right, which much less play all the parts right together, mm-hmm. So it's just a different world, it's an expanding art form for sure,
When you look at and you hear different people today, and you've done the Doobie Brothers, Steely Dan, you've had a successful solo career, but the thing that I find that's intriguing is you are not afraid to cross over into another genre. You've done soul songs, you've done rock, you've done, pop, you've done a lot of different things. Does that keep you hungry? Because it sounds like you always look for new challenges to be able to use the talent you've been given.
It does, and I came from an era which, you might remember in the 70s, it's like records that were on the radio in the top 10 in the 70s probably wouldn't even be anywhere near the radio today, and largely a lot of those artists were very multi genre. You know, I mean, you know, when you listen to like a James Taylor album or even Lou Rawls album or any artist, pick any artist you want, Stevie Wonder, they were always moving through different musical styles, you know, everything from samba to, you know, straight on R&B, gospel, James Taylor, you know, he would do a lot of things that were kind of folky, you know, sometimes downright country. But then he would go into some R&B, you know, thing. And it was almost like that was the thing then in the 70s, was to see how many styles you could hit upon in one album, you know. Mm-hmm. Today, you know, for some reason, with the powers that be, they really try to pigeonhole their artists more. And, you know, it's like they want you to be one trick pony, you know, and not really expand your musical horizon so much because they're afraid you might lose the audience that they're going to try and sell 15 million records to, you know. I guess it's all marketing, really, in a way that has had a lot to do with that. But I kind of miss those days when artists kind of moved around. I like that Leon Bridges record that came out last mm-hmm. couple of years. And for the first time in a long time, I really felt like this was a real sincere effort to kind of move through some different genres. There's tracks on there that are pretty blatantly jazz, blues, you know, but jazz, you know, and then more kind of pop R&B stuff that is unashamedly pop R&B, if you know what I mean, but really done well, you know. I mean, there's a lot to be said for any of those genres when they're kind of approached intelligently and done well, you know. So I'm kind of happy to see young artists coming along who have that ability to kind of move through the musical genres on one project, you know.
Michael McDonald is our guest, and you're touring, and we see a lot of artists from the good old days that are back on the road. And I guess one of the ways artists can now make money, because the record business, as we used to know it, doesn't provide that. But you even have a better advantage because you tour with family as well, with your wife.
Yeah, my wife does come out and sing with me from time to time. My son has come out and opened shows for us with his band, and that's always fun. You know, we kind of pay our way as we go, as opposed to other family vacations where you're just kind of paying your way, you know, out of pocket.
Hey, for you, Michael, people hear songs, and if they only knew how challenging they were to write, produce, and perform, especially when you're working with others. And I go back to a song like Peg, and I've heard that story on how that whole thing came together. Writing a song and finally getting it to somebody's ear is a little bit more of a challenge than maybe most of us who just want to hear the music and think it could be.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been a big fan of those guys and their music, Donald Walter, and and how, you know, uniquely creative and innovative a lot of it was. I think my collaborations largely with other songwriters, whether I'm writing with them or not, just guys whose music I appreciate so much. You know,
who would you like to work with? I mean,
I grew up at a great time. Of course, everybody thinks that about the time they grew up, but growing up in the 70s in the music business and getting a chance to, hear the different writing teams, Ashford Simpson, Holland Gosher Holland, guys in the Eagles, you know, even the guys in the Doobies, and, especially Donald Walter, you know, James Taylor, they all brought something so unique and so special. And back then, one thing that I really appreciated was about that time, you know, and increasingly appreciate about that time is how, you know, when you hear an artist, you know exactly who that is. They, mm-hmm. they don't sound like anybody else, you know. And back in those days, it would indeed be the curse or the kiss of death to sound like someone else. You know, thinking back then, it was like, well, we already have one of those. We don't need another one. You know? And to me, to see the music business evolve into a place and a marketing scheme where the more people sounded the same, it seemed like the better for the record companies, because
they knew how to market that, you know what I mean? And they knew what audience to, you know, and almost who the artist was almost became irrelevant, you know.
Michael McDonald is our guest. And, Michael, before we get out of here, a couple more questions for you, one of which is what keeps you hungry to still perform aside from the financial reward?
Well, you know, I learned long ago that the financial reward wasn't going to be the reason to do what I do. For one reason, you know, I've never been that good with money, so it couldn't matter how much money I was making, I'd spend it, you know. What keeps me hungry is a good question, because I'm not sure I know, you know, all the time. And even as much as recently, I've been asking myself that question. What do I want to do next? You know, and where do I want to put my energies? And I think the battle we all fight in life is complacency. You know, you whatever it is you do, and no matter how rewarding it might be at any given time, there's that danger of becoming complacent in your efforts where that's concerned. And I think you always have to kind of reevaluate and renegotiate with yourself about going forward. And sometimes that all by itself gets really kind of exhausting, but it's nonetheless, I think, necessary, you know.
Michael, final question for you. You've been a beacon to so many people in the music business. You, as we mentioned, you continue to try and give something back. You're going to work with some people from Ferguson this Sunday. What advice do you give aspiring artists who continue to chase that dream and they want to get it fulfilled one day? Because this is a tough business, and it's not kind to everyone, but for those who can survive, it can be a rewarding one. So what would you say to that?
I would say look to the people that you are brought into communion with, you know, and fellowship with in this business and in the artistic pursuit of making music, because that's where the real reward is going to come from. You know, and I mean by that not just the musical reward, certainly your education and the whole process is going to come from that. And it will continue to come from there. But I think the real rewards of doing something artistic with friends and having that artistic pursuit in common is probably the best reward there is in any musical or artistic pursuit. And my other advice would be get out there and play in every conceivable situation you can. You know, play live as much as possible. I always tell my son, you know, you get out there and do some top 40 gigs, and he's always, you know, because he's got his own band and they write their own music. It's like, we want to play our own, you know. And I say, you know, the best education you're ever going to get is playing top 40 music, playing other people's music, playing old songs that are stood the test of time, because you're going to learn a lot about songwriting. You're going to learn a lot about performance and, you know, what the nature of a song that really has the lasting character and the power to you know, persevere in people's minds, what that's all about. And there's no better way to learn that than to play other people. I enjoy probably doing that more than I enjoy playing my own music. I enjoy playing my own music because of the audience, you know, and the audience's enthusiasm, you know. I think otherwise I would be so sick of those songs by now I'd never want to play them again. But when we play them and the audience reacts, that's really what the whole ball of wax is for us. You know, it makes that song brand new again for us, you know, because it's all about their reaction in this moment. But, you know, when I really have, when I think to myself, well, what I feel like doing tonight, I really enjoy going and sitting in with somebody and playing some of our old favorite songs we all grew up hearing, you know. That's good fun for me, you know.
Who is the one person, and I know this is the last question, the one person that you've admired from a distance that you like to work with at some point or would like to really pick their brain? Because I find when artists have a chance to see people from a distance, they wonder how they arrived at this certain destination. So who would that person be for you?
You know, probably standout person in that category for me would be Stevie Wonder, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've even talked about doing it, and you know, it's really my being in complete awe of the guy that, you know, makes me the least bit trepidatious, you know, about, picking up the phone and calling and then saying, hey, let's write something. But, you know, we have talked about doing it. There's a couple songs of his that he's done demos on that, believe it or not, not many people have heard, I don't think, except in his close circle of friends and, or people that worked on the tracks, that he was wondering if I would come down and try a vocal on it just to see if the song worked for me. And so, you know, that's one of the things I look forward to doing in the future. And hopefully maybe, you know, in my wildest dreams, get a chance to write a song with Stevie. It would be, I think I could die happy then, you know.
Hey, pick up the phone and make the call, man. Pick up the phone and make the call. Let's get it going. Let's get it going. Hey, Michael McDonald, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to seeing you here in St. Louis on Sunday night at the Two Hill Center for a great event. Continued success and great health, sir, and thank you for all you've done for the music business and entertained so many people.
Well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate that.